But it's exactly the way that you're talking with Sean in terms of coming out here.
Just talking.
Now you, if you can backtrack, you went to Douglas in 33.
Yes.
But you came, can you tell me a little bit about your own background in terms of your birth date, place, a little bit about where you were from in your own education?
Mm-hmm.
Well, starting with that,
mm-hmm.
and then up to when you actually went to Douglas to get your job and what you did there.
Well, you're asking me now about my past and how I was interested in ever going to Douglas. This is what happened. I was born in New Jersey and went to New Jersey State Normal College and always thought that I had that little certificate for the rest of my life, and I'd always have that to fall back on. And it turns out that I ended up by marrying a man who went into World War I, went into the service in the Rainbow Division, one of the first over. And was gassed and wounded, so when he came home, after doing many, many wonderful things, he came home and he was always ill with lung trouble, or he was gassed and wounded, and so we came to California. Here in California, we lived a beautiful life for 15 years together and had two lovely children. Then the effects of the war finally got him, and I was left alone with two children to take care of. So I took my little certificate from the State College to UCLA to find out about teaching, because I did have to support them.
How old were
they? The boy was 4, the girl was 10.
Mm.
So I had to work that out, do something, so I thought I would go back to the teaching. As I had taught originally in New Jersey in kindergarten work. UCLA, I was told it would take me 3 years and I'd have to go back to college. Well, this, at this particular time, couldn't be done. So I took the alternative and went to business college, which wasn't easy at that age, 35.
And you hadn't worked since? You were married then?
No, I had not worked since I was married. And I wouldn't be working then if it hadn't been that he passed mm-hmm. away and I have to support the children.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew many people over at Douglas. It was a very small aircraft company at that time on Oceanport Boulevard. They had just moved there not too many years before from Wiltshire Boulevard, the original spot. Did you know that?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
On Wiltshire and Santa Monica?
Wiltshire and Santa Monica. You didn't? That was the original one.
Hmm.
And then they needed bigger planes to build and so forth and so on, so they had to move and get bigger quarters. So I went over and put my application in, and I was fresh out of business college. My job was in the employment office. There was one employment manager and me, and nobody else.
How long did the business college course take?
2 years.
Oh.
2 years. And that was everything, secretarial work and everything. Then I was told that because I had two children, they would start me at 45 cents an hour instead of 40, the original regular price, wage. And so that looked pretty good to me right then. And I worked with the employment manager, and at that time, I'll give you a little incident that was kind of cute. Working out of our office, the employment office, were two mail clerks who delivered the mail down into the plant. And I had gotten a phone call from somebody that they wanted to talk with this particular employee because his Aunt Mary had died. So I tried to get word down to the employee without hurting his feelings and upsetting his work. So I asked, sent a note down by one of the mail boys, and they were to wait and get an answer back for me. So we went down, he found the employee and told him that his Aunt Mary had passed away. And so he turned around and he said, "Well, it's about time." So he didn't, you know, as far as Aunt Mary was concerned, it didn't mean anything to him. And I was worried that it might upset him. So,
What was your role in your job then in the employment office in those first couple of years?
It was signing up all new employees, transferring them, and terminating them.
Now, did you actually do the interviews with them then?
Many of them. Not all of them. Many of them. And as I told you before, many of them were very interesting interviews because they were, they eventually were executives.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back and told me, asked me, did I remember when I signed them up? And it was really interesting at that particular time when I retired after 27 years with them, to have these executives come and say they remembered when I signed them up and how scared they were, and that I kind of calmed them down. And, you know, it was just routine for me, that's the reason why. Then it grew because the war came on, and thousands and thousands of people came from all over the country, and the typical Oklahoma Okies came out with their trucks, with their wagon, anything to get a job in aircraft, because it was very important at that particular time. And then my job grew from the little clerk in the employment office to counselor, and then first secretary to the employment director.
Mm-hmm. What? Did more employees come in? You said there were just the two of you initially.
Well, when the war started, let's say, 1941.
About when you built up.
Yeah, when it really began. Mm-hmm. Then more employees came in, and with that, I was able to get jobs of more responsibility. And secretary to the top man in personnel. And
what was his name?
There were several of them. I had several of them. One was, the last one that I had was Jerems,
mm-hmm.
W.G. Jerems. And he eventually went to the Oklahoma City plant. But this job of mine was very interesting because the counseling of women I love, because I like them, I enjoy them. And the problems, many times, were this. Just the individual cases that would come up in the department, the supervisors would call. Would I talk with so-and-so, and why? What was the matter? Why? They wanted me to straighten the person out, the employee out. And we had helpers. There were many counselors. At first, I started as the only woman counselor.
And when was that? Was that in 42, would you say?
I would say about 42. And then the plant grew so that one person couldn't handle it, because we had three shifts around the clock. And we had at least two counselors on each shift. And these women, and that's as far as I was concerned, I did the hiring of them for Santa Monica plant and Long Beach plant. The others, no. But I had a certain amount of control over them because I would go back to the different plants and interview them, or if there was a problem that had come up, management would ask me how we handle it out here.
I see. So your being in charge of them was somewhat informal, when it sounds like.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, before there was more than yourself, Would you also go to the other plans to say Elsa Gunville?
You mean, no.
Or just San Monica?
During the war, mm-hmm. Elsa Gunville, Long Beach, and Santa Monica. During that time. And then I did make one trip to Chicago, Oklahoma City, and the other plants.
Uh-huh.
Simply on women's problems.
Now, how did the counseling, how did you move from the more clerical position, although clearly you were doing considerably more than that, into counseling? Was there other counseling that was developing at the same time, or did the women's counselor position become one of the first in terms of counseling?
I would say that as women's, because they had never had women doing these jobs that they were doing now, and they needed someone, and I happened to be the fortunate one because I was there mm-hmm. on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very new with everybody in every organization. So we sort of felt our way and had the help of when we'd have luncheons and meet with other counselors or coordinators in other aircraft and other shipyards,
mm-hmm.
we would talk with them and get help from them. And if they had problems, they would ask us. And it was a mutual thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall how the study that Louise Snyder at that time made, how that developed, who had asked for that, and how she happened to be brought in?
I really don't know how she happened to be brought in, but I know that something had to be done at that time, and she was the one that was picked to do it, and she spent a summer
mm-hmm.
there, and I got to know her very well, and we remained good friends mm-hmm. for years and still correspond. And Louise broke down the jobs from that men had done previously so that two women could do them, in some cases, not all of them. And when there were many problems that came up at this particular time because these women had never done that type of work, and sometimes the supervisors couldn't understand why they weren't able to do the same as the men.
Mm-hmm.
But we would listen and help, try to help, listen to their problems and try to help them out, and with the supervision. In each particular department. And we also had about 10 matrons that were not counselors, but they would go into restrooms or areas where women were congregating and talk with them,
mm-hmm.
listen to their stories, and in many cases refer them to the counselors. For instance, they would have tales to tell about their husbands or bad news about their husband in the service, and they would talk with them and then come,
mm-hmm.
if they had the problem, whether they would be referred then to me or a counselor. And one day, I really feel that my job was so universal that you can't pin it down to any one thing. I remember going into the front office, and these men said, "There she is. She, give it to her. Cheer her up." And I said, "What?" Well, it turned out that one of our employees in Africa, as we had the planes were ready, they were flown to Africa to have all extras put on it. And one man had been killed there, and somebody had to tell the wife.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just one. That's the reason I say it wasn't just counseling, it was a lot of things that they would ask. So I went over that night and told her, broke the news to her. But it was interesting. I mean, I never will forget the various sundry things that happened.
Was there a way in which the job was initially defined or conceived of when the position of counselor, your title changed and became woman counselor?
Coordinating later,
mm-hmm.
simply because, you mean from the beginning, yes. Yes, that's it, yeah. First, as I told you, first I was just started in as a clerk and with the employment manager, And then it grew and grew and grew to do, I was to do secretarial work. And I did that, and then always in personnel. But then from there on, it grew to, the reason counseling was given to me was that I happened to be there at the right time. And I had been there longer than anybody. And although I had never had the training of social service work, which most of them were, it was required at most. But the experience that I had meant more, they felt, than that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Then later it changed.
And did you, once you became first the counselor and then the coordinator
yes.
of counseling, was that organizationally still within the personnel department or industrial
mm-hmm.
relations?
It was
Is it
personnel,
mm-hmm.
under personnel.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I never was anything but in personnel, never was in any other area except that. And it was administrative. And then when the war was over, I went back to the hourly because I was there that long.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it first began, how did you define your functions as a counselor? What did you see your role as?
As it was explained to me, I was to help these women make their adjustment to this type of life. They had come from the home and they're with their families and everything, and they actually didn't even know what it was all about until they got there and they were trained on the job or in classes
mm-hmm.
there. And ours was in no way to help them with the job other than emotionally and mentally to understand what they were doing and that helped them to make the adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Now what about problems in terms of coordinating their family life, the kinds of activities that a homemaker they still had to carry on while they were working? Did you become involved in helping with that?
Well, I remember this one thing, and that is with the schools, the getting the daycare
mm-hmm.
centers, that kind of thing. We would meet, and as far as Santa Monica is concerned, not other cities, I had nothing to do with that, but in Santa Monica. And the daycare centers where they could leave their children, but I must remember that we had them from all over. They weren't all living in Santa Monica, although many of them were, but not all of them. And
well, what was your role being in terms of the daycare center?
Only in meetings and talking and discussing it with groups of educators.
Mm.
And we wouldn't do it, but we'd let them know the need that there was there. That's all. That's what I did. And as a result, we had quite a few.
Mm-hmm. And then in turn, would you... Would the women be able to come to you, for instance, if we had a childcare problem and were looking for
childcare? Oh, yes.
Childcare?
And also, I remember one day I had a woman come to me. She was pregnant, and she wanted to stay on. She didn't want anybody in the department to know. She wanted to go off on a leave of absence, and she wanted not to be called a pregnancy leave. And I thought that I would fight for her and do everything I could to get it. This is one little case. So I called the supervisor and explained the thing to him. And of course, the answer that I got back was, "Oh, Cookie, you and your women." And I said, "Yes, you and your men who get them pregnant." I did. That's exactly what I did. And this gal, I was able to get this leave of absence for her. And sure, the supervisor knew, but nobody, as far as I know, nobody in the department knew. And then other problems were such as the supervisor would refer them to me that, "Martha, you have to do something with this woman. We cannot have her in the department. The odor is terrible." So I would have to talk with her.
Hmm.
And
now how would you handle something like that?
Well, it wasn't easy. But I'd explain to her that we all have to have our daily baths or as near that as possible and use a deodorant. But especially when we're working as closely with other people as we are in this plant. And sometimes they resented it, but mostly I would put it over so that there was no feeling at all. Then another case I remember very well was a black girl, and she was beautiful. And really, no one would know that she was black if she hadn't told me. She must have been a mulatto, mm-hmm. part white, way back. And she was telling me that she rides with a group of people, and when she gets here, that people are not very kind to her and treating her as a black woman. And so when we got down, I asked her, the one thing that I said was, well, who do you ride with when you come to work? Black people. And I said, well, all right, then why don't you accept it? Are you black? And she said, yes, I'm black. Well, you never know it. Never. And so I said, why? Why not be proud? If you are black, why not? Why try to hide it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she said, at UCLA, I went through there as a white woman.
Mm.
So if you are going to associate with blacks, said I, and you're bound to be classed as one. So I never knew whatever happened to that girl, whether she
mm-hmm.
changed her riders or whether she accepted the black. Because my feeling is that why be ashamed of it
mm-hmm.
if you are black and if you're going to be accepted?
That brings to mind a question about the issue, the introduction of the black workers and the white southern workers.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of problems did you
we had
over those sort of racial issues?
Of course, that was all. When we were hired, they had an orientation program, and that was all brought out in that. I did not have anything to do with that.
Uh-huh.
That my particular job was more for the problems that the supervisors ran across and sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do know that in many of the aircraft companies, the women were in employment. When they came in, they were women, women working in employment office gave them that instruction too.
Mm-hmm.
That was all part of their orientation.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't segregated to just women, it was everybody that was hired that particular day was signed up, you see.
And you didn't encounter problems weren't turned over to you of the racial.
Oh, yes,
nature.
Of course. Of course, if women were any part of it, yes, then it would be turned over to me.
Do you recall any of those sorts of problems?
No, I really don't. I don't offhand, but I know that they weren't so much. They really weren't, because these people were. Remember, this is wartime. It isn't like it is today. It was wartime. There were white men and colored men fighting in the war, and we could always bring that up and mention it to them, so there's no reason to
mm-hmm.
to have any feeling on that score.
Do you recall any issues raised among the women as the black women were introduced about the bathrooms?
That was never brought up. And we, as I told you, we had matrons who went out into the factory down into the restroom section. And there was no segregation then at all. That was just never thought of at
mm-hmm.
all. And they went down, and any problems that they ran across, they would hear right there on the spot. And then they would send those women up to us to talk
mm-hmm.
with them.
Now, the referral system.
Yes.
Sounds like it came either from the
supervisor
or the matron.
Yes. Up to, yes,
uh-huh. So now, did you, or later when the other counselors came in, go into the plant and kind of look for
I always was out in the plant. Mm-hmm. Not all the time, I don't mean that. But I mean, that was, to me, part of my, was my job, and also contact supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you could pick up a lot of trouble, or
mm-hmm.
what would be trouble eventually. And there was always a good rapport with the men, with the supervisors, because to me that was very important, and I'd been there when it was building up,
mm-hmm.
right in the beginning. Could have even hired some of those supervisors.
Mm-hmm. What do you think was the general attitude towards the introduction of the women as they were first being brought in, of the supervisors who weren't used to this sort of workforce?
There was a little feeling of animosity, let's say, but they realized that that's, if they were going to get work done, that they had to accept it. There was no other, they couldn't do anything else. They had to accept them. So their attitude changed after a while, and the women were very good. Majority of them were excellent. And women who had never done anything came in there and riveted and climbed up on top of the wing and did work just the same as any man. And after the war was over, of course, as you know, many of them stayed.
Mm-hmm.
The majority left, but there always were some that stayed.
Did you see changes in the women themselves who came in and started in these jobs that required more physical skills, for instance,
mm-hmm.
than many of the jobs that even those who've been working in had before? Did you notice their own reactions to that sort of work and possible changes?
I don't particularly remember any, but I do remember that they broadened, and they were bigger people by the time they were through, because they realized what they were doing and that they had to do it, and it was all a war, part of the war effort. And my feeling is, of course, I thought they did wonderful work. There was always the problem child, but that person was taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And you, a minute ago you asked me about referrals, things that we were, there were cases of child care, not only in the schools, but I remember one particular case. It was a woman who had a child. She was financially up against it, and this youngster had to go to the hospital for treatment of something, and so I called and made that arrangement for through the welfare of the hospital. And so I got to know these women who were working in those jobs in the hospital. And usually if I explained the case as it was, the fee was much lower,
mm-hmm.
much lower for them. But these are things that we did in routine, never thought anything about it, if the employer requested it. But everything like that was done, they would come
mm-hmm.
to us and ask us for the help. And we could usually work it out. I remember a doctor come asking me about if there were any illegitimate babies born from our employees, and I knew about it, but I would refer it to him. Fortunately, I never have to, because that's something I wouldn't care to do.
What do you think? Why was he asking about that?
Because they wanted to have people that wanted to adopt.
For adoption.
Yes, for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And this one particular girl that I told you about before that wanted help,
mm-hmm.
I was able to help her. And where she went to have her baby, and then she came back. And she lived with a friend, and then came back to work. As far as the employees were concerned, they didn't know anything about it. But there was always something to work at, and I loved it. I mean, as I look back, I really loved it. And then...
What was the... relationships that you had with community agencies, did you develop, say, a resource file to refer
yes.
the women to things?
Definitely.
How did you go about developing that?
Well, It was mostly the cases that came up, as each case came up, then that was the referral. And then we always had that on tap to refer for the next time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great thing, it really was, because many times that I was included, always asked to come down to the certain luncheon where that everything would be discussed and gone over.
Mm-hmm.
And as I told you, with the girl, with the women, other aircraft women like Vulti,
mm-hmm.
Lockheed, North American, and shipyards, we had various groups of organizations that met in lunches and discussed. A lot of it was informal.